CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, rise and shine. Time to start your day. It's Thursday already. We've almost got to the end of the week, and it feels like just yesterday October started. That's how it's going to happen. Here and down. All the way downhill to Christmas and New Year and all that stuff. I got to remind you, because otherwise it's going to hit you like a ton of bricks. All right, good morning, everybody. We've got Lebang, we've got Pumi, me, we've got you. Bulelo is still busy running trail runs and doing things in Tsitsikamma Forest, and who knows what's going on. He's got a cult, basically, that he started there. That's what I think is happening. Yeah, I'm telling you, that's what's going on. Bulelo started a cult. Yeah, and, we're okay with that. Like, to each his own. And
there's already one out there in Tsitsikamma. He doesn't need a second one.
Is there another cult there?
Is it a cult? There's a big Rastafarian community that lives out there in the forest.
Really?
Same thing, really.
Rasta?
Same thing, really.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's amazing.
Someone needs to do a documentary on that.
I'm out of the
loop. I think that's the only reason I know about it is because I've seen it on TV somewhere.
Very impressive. You see, I feel very ignorant. I didn't know about this. So we tried to arrange the screen this morning, if you're watching us on YouTube, tried to arrange the screen so that I would be the rose between the thorns, or the thorn between the roses.
What?
So, wow. So I could put myself between Pumi and Lebang, but it didn't work. God does not want it that way. He wants it to look like this. So we've got me, then Lebang, then Pumi on the screen. It's split into three. Anyway, so what's been happening? How are you, Pums? I haven't caught up with you for a week.
You know, you say that about the thorn and the roses, and
yeah.
I'm reminded of that. There was, I think on MTV, a little clip of Paris Hilton saying, I'd rather be... you have to have everybody around you that's just shine, because would you rather be like a rose among roses or like a thorn among the weeds?
Oh my God.
Oh my goodness.
Like, talking about twisting of saying, that chick is, she's the one who was walking around in that shirt that said don't be poor, right?
Isn't she like a DJ now?
Well, the point is, someone like her mustn't talk about not being poor when we know all her money is family money and she's done nothing to earn almost any of it. So, although she was technically one of the first, it was Pamela Anderson and her and Kim Kardashian who started the sex tape business. You know, they were the ones who, they were the first people who became famous for being famous, remember?
I was going to say the original influencers. Yeah, Kim K was her PA even at some point. Like, literally, that was
correct.
Her job. Kim Kardashian learned everything from Paris Hilton. We need to give Paris Hilton her flowers, in fact, while we still can, for leading this huge generation of influencers.
So we'll just edit that first bit out about how she's useless, and we'll just say, oh, no. After careful consideration, we've changed our minds. We're actually, impressed with
it. And she made lots of money. So she did make lots of her own money during that time, too.
Right.
Of course, she was given she didn't bootstrap it. She was given quite a big head start by Grandpa. By Grandpa and his famous surname and money.
His hotel empire. That's the one.
But it seems like a lifetime away, that.
Well,
a lot has happened.
Yeah, the world has changed considerably since then. now, no one, I don't think people will even blink if there's a sex tape going on of anybody, because these days some people are making sex tapes every day on their OnlyFans accounts. So it's not a thing anymore.
There are some that if they were like leaked, it would still cause a little wobble.
What, like?
I think there are some things that could cause a wobble.
Who? Hillary Clinton?
What kind of wobble do you speak of?
That's hilarious. So Ruth wants to know, it's a good question, because this time last week Cyril surprised us without even announcing a family meeting. He just pitched up on TV and said, we're going to level one. And of course, the elections are just around the corner, so that could be part of the reason he's doing it. But Ruth is asking, when do you predict lockdown will end? Well, I don't know. I mean, to me, it ended.
I mean, does it even matter?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Because to me, it ended.
When their mayor's dying in the middle of the night and car crashes in the middle of the night, they're obviously not on lockdown.
Can I tell you something? We've lost a lot of mayors in the last while, hey? There are about three or four of them that are dead now, right?
There was another radio station, there was another DJ that made a very tenuous connection between natural selection, dying mayors, and political assassinations.
And did they get into trouble?
I have no idea. All I know is I saw this clip and I thought, ma'am, what are you... Just slow your roll there. That's a very big leap to be making at this time of the year. But anyway.
Well, wasn't the first one was Jolly D, who was just made mayor of Johannesburg like a couple of weeks before he died. And then suddenly he was gone. We hardly get to know the guy.
And there was one who survived quite a crash down in the Eastern Cape, isn't it?
Well, isn't the whole of the Eastern Cape just one big crash?
One big pothole.
Mm.
Wow.
That's how I feel about it.
Dude.
Horrible place.
I just want to know how fast these guys are actually driving. Like, it's the middle of the night. You're all by yourself on the road. Mm. Really.
But
how fast are you driving?
Surely if you're the mayor of a major metro... You have someone driving you, and what are you doing at 12 o'clock at night? Well, I mean, that's what I thought. I just imagine that it's a thing that they can do. They can call someone up and say, I need to go here. Drive me, please.
Surely.
Mayor of Johannesburg has to get into their own Toyota Corolla and drive.
That's the country we live in. That's the country we live in. Damn it, we don't have the money. They should drive their own damn selves around.
I'm all for it, but I assumed that they didn't.
They probably don't. I'm just living in a fantasy.
Remember there was that president of, I think it was Paraguay, who drove like this really fucked up old car. And he gave all of his salary back to the country, and like we can't even remember his name now. But it seemed like a noble gesture at the time. I mean, good for him, right? Even though nothing came of it. I don't think Paraguay's suddenly become the most successful country in South America just because he did those sacrificial things. Who knows? So DK says after the elections we will see a move to a tighter lockdown again. Ugh, I don't know. I think it's done. People don't care anymore. You know, they even...
Yeah, I think...
Like, I was walking around on... When was it? Tuesday. I went to the shops, and I was at meetings, and I went for a lunch with somebody, and then I wasn't wearing a mask for most of it. And even walking into the restaurant, I didn't bother. Because nobody was really fazed. No one looked at me funny. There wasn't any of this weirdness. Plus, I'd already, you know, I'd had it on, and then I took it off somewhere in the shopping center when I wasn't near people. And then when I went into the restaurant, I still didn't have it on. Nobody said to me, oh, please put it on. And if they did, I'd just say, no, I'm about to sit down. And then I'm going to take it off anyway. So, no. What are you going to do?
Yeah. People don't care anymore. Let's be honest.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
I don't think we're going to go back to any kind. It'll just kind of like peter away.
Fizzle out.
No.
I mean, I don't see him putting us on a stricter lockdown, especially now that he's complained to old Bojo about us being on a red list. So, like, you want to get out of the country.
Right.
Allow people out of their houses.
Correct. Right. You can't have stricter rules than the rules that everybody's applying internationally. So let me just move on from this to something else, because you're both parents, and we've got a really great guest on the show next week, Tuesday. Now, I'm not going to be here, but between Lebang and Bulelo, they're going to make you feel at home. And we've got this amazing guest coming in, and the reason I mentioned it to both of you is because He's quite a well-known person, Dr. Ken Resnick, and he is going to be talking about smart parenting. Have you heard of this guy?
Yeah, I'm actually reading the book.
I have.
Okay, so he's apparently one of these parents who says people are too soft on their kids. As soon as your kid can do something, it must do it for itself. So in other words, if your kid is old enough to make their own sandwiches for school, you should let them do it. If your kid is old enough to, you know, carry the groceries from the shop to the car, they should do it. And all these kinds of things. It's probably going to upset and rile up a lot of parents, but I think for many parents, they'll be like, yes, finally someone's making sense. So I'm looking forward to hearing what Dr. Ken Resnick has to say. That's next week, Tuesday.
Yeah, that's going to be very, very cool. Interesting, but the bigger thing is that not all kids can manage the same treatment is the thing. You know, there's no blanket form of parenting that we could just apply across everyone. So
right.
I'm quite keen to see the riled up parents.
yeah, me too. Because those people, I mean, they need a bit of a wake-up call. You know, if you're a bad parent, and again, these are not like black and white categories. If you're a bad parent, you don't know you're a bad parent. If you're a good parent, you don't necessarily even know you're doing that, because a lot of parents, everything they do, they second guess themselves. They're like, oh, am I doing this right? I mean, you two know because you both are parents, but it must be so difficult because there's no guidebook. There's no constitution for parents that you can go and refer to Section 5. 1230, and like, oh, okay, that's what I do when the kid has a tantrum in a shop. You just have to figure it out yourself.
So, you know, we've been doing work that's brought us to a realization about the number of kids in our country who have had to raise themselves without parents. So, yeah. With coming out, remember we spoke about the AIDS pandemic?
Yes.
Believe it or not, 10%, apparently something like 10% of our population was killed by the pandemic. And wow. And a lot of those people were of the age where they were parents, young parents, older parents, grandparents. And so we have, I mean, the term child-headed household, we didn't know until the 90s. Mm-hmm. So there are also lots of kids out there who are just raising themselves and raising their siblings. And that's a whole other set of issues that we never talk about in this country.
It's so interesting that humans can be this resilient, that we can survive and we can raise other children even when we're children. And that those people, hey, listen, you know, no one grows up perfectly. But for all you know, there are just a couple of these kids who are in child-headed households, kind of raising themselves or the elder siblings raising them. They might end up absolutely fine, or they might end up a complete disaster, just like, you know, if they had parents. So I think we're going to see in the future whether these kids have come up better or worse, because the odds are stacked against them. But you never know, hey? Sometimes these hard times breed tough people.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe.
Oh, sorry.
Because this way, you're a kid. You know what kids want. You know what kids need. You're winging it, but who best
maybe,
in that moment?
Maybe. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but, you know, we've got to try and look at this and say, well, if there are any gaps that we could fill because we have extra challenges, then that does teach us extra skills. You have to suddenly skill yourself up as a kid, because now you're looking after the other kids. Oh, did I tell you guys? I didn't tell you this on Tuesday when he just dropped my two nephews off at school, and my brother had a gun pulled on him at the robots. And
what?
Yeah, they took his cell phone from him at the robots, just sort of coming onto the highway. And this guy tapped his gun on the glass on the window, and said, "Give me your cell phone."
Oi.
Yeah, so we must all just be a little bit more aware at the moment, because there are lots of people who are, you know,
they're
desperate and criminal and hungry and will probably on tick, who knows, and will do anything to steal your stuff. So you got to be wide awake, make sure that you're not on your phone while you're in your car, because honestly, it's just an invitation. You know, if he's okay. I mean, I said to him, I saw him on Tuesday night. I said to him, you know, you're doing all right. He said, you know, he's okay. He's being strong, but being having a gun put in your face is never fun. And I, you know, I'm sure there's going to be some PTSD after this. And he, you know, you should see someone. Because the professionals, even if it's just for a session or two, it'll help him to figure out what's happened, to deal with it, to have a way of making sense of it, because you need that.
God, I'm so glad the kids were not in the car.
That's what he was saying. You know, he was saying if they were in the car, he wouldn't have known what to do. Yeah. So it's just, it's a horrible thing to happen. Just be aware. Don't be sitting on your phone either like this or, you know, holding it in front of you, because
you shouldn't be holding your phone in the car.
I know, I know. But we all do it. I see people, I drive past people on the highway and they're going at 120 and they've got their phone in their hand looking at it. And you think, uh-oh, if someone upstream slams on brakes.
That just drives my anxiety.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's this part of my neck.
No, it's horrible.
It happens.
Horrible.
It really happens. Jeez. Sorry to your brother. This was in Pretoria, right?
Yeah, it was. It was near Atterbury, which is one of the sort of main on-ramps and off-ramps to the highway. And, you know, this guy, he's obviously an opportunist. It's not some kind of high-level criminal mastermind. It's just someone who wants to get a phone to sell it quickly.
No, but that sounds like somebody who's like hanging out there. He's got a gun. He's planned for it. He knows people are coming up and stopping. I don't think he's just like just with this one guy. He's going to like try a whole.
I mean, the interesting thing is that, you know, clearly other cars around him saw this. And it could have been a plastic gun. You never know, right? But you're not going to take a chance. You're not going to fight with the guy and then it turns out not to be a plastic gun, because then it's all over. The worst part is he said, you know, he's got stuff on his phone, like he's got, you know, passwords to things and banking and shit like that that he was very worried about. And when your phone gets taken, it takes you a day to delete, to change passwords, to inform your bank, to fix things, it's a major, major mission.
So there was a thread. Somebody did a thread, I think last week, Thursday or Friday, about having their phone stolen.
Yes.
In a mall.
Yeah.
Mall of Africa.
Mall of Africa, yeah.
Definitely Mall of Africa. Well, there were lots of people in the comments kind of all saying Mall of Africa is which has a whole lot of implications. But she, you know, the way she tells the story is she answered the phone, she put it back in her little moon bag that, you know, the one you have strapped across your body. But just like that, she didn't see when or how. She just noticed that her phone was gone when she got to the pay point, to the till. And literally she was already in the mall. She went to the ATM to stop her cards. She went to the iStore, I think, to try and find my iPhone.
Yeah.
And find my iPhone, and it was off the grid already.
Very quick.
But within that kind of hour or so, her bank accounts transferred, money transferred out of her bank accounts.
Oh my God.
Because of all of that, and I was wondering, what does that mean? Like, did they have, because, you know, you've got your face recognition to open up, or your thumbprint to open you. What?
That's nothing. That is easy. They literally just take these phones to a shop. The shop just says, wipe, erase, open everything. If your things are connected to Gmail, that's where they get you, because ultimately you connect all of your passwords to your one Gmail account and blah, 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 blah. You save all your passwords on your insane. It takes less than an hour for them to get into everything.
That's scary. That is so scary.
It is.
Jesus.
It is.
But then you also have to know that it has insider like help,
yeah, of course,
right? It's not just some random guy. This is somebody on
how do you
side.
Even,
like,
you know, how
the
do you,
Uber Eats.
Yeah.
I've had a friend who had their phone stolen, and within an hour, the Uber Eats account was racked up to like thousands, like 10,000 rand.
Jesus.
I'm like, what are you doing? Like, chicken licking hot wings for 10,000 rand? No, but it must be some kind of way of kind of getting money out of it. Because like 10,000 rands worth of Uber Eats, come on.
So Pumi, I'm actually glad you brought this up. Because when I saw this tweet last week, I kind of empathized with the girl because I also got scammed in a similar way at Mall of Africa. So I commented on her tweet and I said, hey girl, I'm so sorry this happened to you. I actually got 3 iPhones stolen. They actually took 18,000 rand of my money and swiped it at Louis Vuitton and Mall of Africa. And I'm so sorry I had to go through this. Just know you'll get through it. And immediately after I tweeted that, somebody said, but there's no Louis Vuitton and Mall of Africa. And I'm like, but there has to be. So I quickly check Google, and I'm like, shit, there is no Mall of Africa. I meant Versace. Sorry, my bad, I meant Versace.
Oh,
anyway,
wow.
Long story short, I went on to trend for being a liar. CBD Twitter found me, took my picture, painted it everywhere, and said, hey, guys, this is the liar. She walks on with 3 cell phones, blah, blah, blah. It became a whole thing. Anyway, there's no such thing as bad publicity. Literally the next day, I went and recorded a podcast on how I got scammed, and I unpacked the whole story. And then I posted it on under the tweet. Literally within 5 minutes, people were coming back to me, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I don't know. Just looked like a lie. Blah, 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 blah. It was so intense. Like, when I walked into the office last week, Thursday, people were like, Lebang, are you okay? Oh, my gosh.
Well.
We saw you were trending because of that Mall of Africa tweet. I'm like, yo, guys, I'm happy to trend.
Are you kidding? All you wanted to do was, like, sympathize with some other person.
Dude, that's all I was doing. That's all I... Because this poor girl was like, guys, my money's been wiped out of my accounts. They took my phone. I had to fly to PE. Blah, blah, blah. I was like, dude, you'll be fine.
Because she had so much stuff going on in that thread.
I felt so bad for her. So I was like... Let me help her and make her feel a bit better.
Yeah.
I went through way worse, but I eventually got through it. Your CBD Twitter found me. Guys, like, I was literally like the face of lies for those few.
So for those of us who don't know, what is CBD Twitter?
Oh, thank you for asking. So there's a place called Black Twitter, right? Mm. And then deep, 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 deep inside of Black Twitter is a place called CBD Twitter. So I don't know if there's like a right term for it.
Just like every township, every township, there are areas in the township. So Black Twitter has got Always Twitter. It's got Four Ways Twitter. It's got CBD. CBD is like the city, right?
Mm.
It's the outer ghetto. And then there's Legal Twitter. And there's Val Twitter.
Yeah.
There's Rich Auntie Twitter. So there's like a nice range. But CBD Twitter is exactly like that. Imagine you're walking in CBD. It's packed. There's all sorts of people. People are bumping into you. Other people are trying to rob you. Others are trying to scam you. It's just a lot happening all at the same time.
So
that's CBD Twitter.
I'm still horrified. Like, all you were doing was trying to make this girl feel better. And then suddenly you get called a liar and people are doxing you and putting your picture out and calling you this and calling you that. And like, what the fuck is wrong with people? Really?
Honestly, that's how I felt. I was like, what the fuck is wrong with you guys?
You know, we know that social media is an intense place to be.
Mm.
We know that Twitter, in particular, is extremely, like, toxic. It's not for the faint-hearted, right? Mm. But I am convinced, guys, that South African Twitter in particular is 1,000-fold worse than anywhere else.
Do you think so?
It's such major extremes.
I agree.
Like this week alone, I am on Twitter all the time. I'm a voyeur on Twitter.
Mm.
I am just like, this week alone, so much stuff has happened on South African Twitter, on the South African Twitter streets. Whether it's like Musi Maimane and Shimza getting into a tour, whether it's Fuzile Van Damme freaking out with Ronaldo Holt. Whether it's like Herman Mashaba, like it is wild. It is like wild.
But then,
and South Africans also have this incredibly incisive humor. You know, the humor of South Africans is also unmatched. No matter how serious or crazy a thing can be, South Africans know how to find the funny in it all, and the way they respond and the things that they put out there. I am just like,
but you see, that's the thing for me. If we can, you know, stay off the violence a bit, because now we're normalizing violence on Twitter.
Mm.
We're almost making it cool to be mean to each other and laugh at each other's traumas and stuff. If we can focus on just the funny, because I've seen South Africans be so creative in how they can spin a story.
I hate to say it, but like, this is why I gave up on that particular social medium for a long time, and I'm still not back on. But what I find interesting is, like, if we just killed Twitter, like, this week we had this outage of Facebook and WhatsApp and Instagram, and it was obviously a problem for some people, because many, many of us use WhatsApp as our primary communication tool for business, for family, for friends, you know, to make arrangements, to get directions, to sort out meetings. Like, if you were on your way somewhere on Monday, Tuesday night, and you didn't have directions, and suddenly you were relying on, you thought, I'll just WhatsApp them on the way, which many of us do, then suddenly you might have found yourself completely lost. And that can be a serious problem. But Twitter is not necessary. Like, I think if somehow we just switched it off for South Africa, I think we'd get better as a society, not worse. I think we'd be nicer to each other, not as horrible as we are to each other. It wouldn't allow these. And remember, it's only a small number of very agitated, very sad, very angry people. The majority of people want to go on there for news. It still has its uses. I mean, it is useful for news. It's useful to know. Particularly, you know, when there's a lot of political news going on, what's really happening, because the politicians will try to lie to us, but other people will have their own theories. That stuff's useful. But we've got to find a way of switching off those.
Listen, I, for one, will miss the mask falling off people, because that's the other thing that Twitter does, is the mask slips all the time.
Yeah.
People portray a particular thing, but they forget themselves on Twitter.
Yeah.
They forget themselves, and they forget that, like, people are watching.
Yep.
And I, for one, will miss the mask falling off. I'm sorry. I will be one of the people that will miss it.
Let's not get rid of it. We just need to learn how to use it properly. So I, for one, I've muted a lot of words. There's words that I just don't see on my timeline because I have no interest. I've muted words, I've blocked accounts. I'm not shy to remove the gap from my timeline. And therefore, most of the time, my experience on Twitter is quite decent. I'm not exposed to the bullshit. So just use it wisely and you'll be fine. Just create like little lists of accounts that you want to see, blah, blah,
That's
blah.
That's a good
it's
idea.
Brilliant.
In other words, you have to actually take trouble to curate this. It's like clearing out the junk mail every now and then. You have to go and unsubscribe from all those things that you subscribe 100%. To without your permission. So
it is also like algorithms. It's like what you watch on Netflix is what you keep getting served. So if you watch rubbish, you'll just keep getting served rubbish. Same thing with Twitter. The algorithm serves you.
Yeah, and just by getting people who are horrible off of Twitter doesn't mean you're going to get rid of those people. They're still in society, right? So you've got to clean it up for yourself. As we grow up, this is Michael's point. He says, as we grow up, we receive mental and physical education. Emotional education is zero. Our family doesn't help either, as they've also had no emotional development. Yet people are so emotionally driven. It's a good point.
Sure.
How do you even start that? I mean, how would you teach people emotional education? How would you do that?
Sure.
Because most of us only learn emotional education by making mistakes, by doing things wrong. So we would have to have a place where people could afford to shout and scream at each other, to cry, to fall in love, to break up. These are the things that life teaches you. It's not something you can go. There's no university that you can go and learn this from. And movies, it's entertainment. You don't take it seriously. I mean,
No. I'm saying that it sounds like he's describing a movie, like a place where you can go and cry and whatnot.
Oh, no.
A movie. We can't live in a movie. So it's not going to happen.
So sadly, Michael, the only way that you ever learn that stuff is by going through it yourself.
Experience.
And some people, even if they've been through it themselves, they still don't learn. It's always emotional. You can be a child emotionally, or you can be an adult emotionally. And most people are still stuck in children.
Yep.
They're still in child mode when it comes to their emotions. All right. We do have to look at some actual headlines this morning. I was quite enjoying that, but let's go to it. Let's see what's going on. First things first, New Zealand has raised their interest rates for the first time in 7 years. This is actually news in New Zealand because nothing ever happens there. So the Reserve Bank of New Zealand has increased its cash rate by a quarter of a percentage point to 0.5%. Their interest rate is 0.5%. After it's gone up.
What was it before? How much has it gone up by?
By a quarter of a percentage point. So it was
0.25%.
Now it's at 0.5%. But that's still really low, right? I mean, if you can afford to buy property there, because I believe it's very expensive, then you will now be paying a little bit more because the interest rate just went up. But it's still nothing compared to us. What's our interest rate at the moment?
I think it's like 13. It's quite high. It's a double digit.
Let me look it up quickly.
Let me look.
I can't believe we're South African interest rate. Let me just see what's going on here. Because the Reserve Bank, you know, Lesetse Kanyako, he always tells us that at 3.5%, key interest rate's only 3.5. But still, that's like five times what...
Key interest rates.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's low, but I mean...
That's not what your bank interest rate is.
Which bank has the best interest rate?
That's what the key interest rate is, what the banks borrow from the Reserve Bank at.
So
the interest rate that affects you is different.
That's right, because African Bank pays 10%, or you have to pay them a 10% interest rate. Discovery Bank 8.35%. First National Bank 8%. So that's roughly where it is. Those are some interesting things. He has rateweb.co.za. I didn't even know there was such a site.
Prime.
Yeah.
Prime interest is what we pay.
Capitec 7.9%, Nedbank 7.51%. And then it's got, you know, your best returns on those kinds of interest rates. Again, Nedbank's hovering around 7.5%. Capitec 6.8 to 6.61. It's interesting stuff.
Okay.
So there we go. We're learning things. Even though we thought we were informed, we're clearly not. But New Zealand all the way down at 0.5%. Economists had expected the hike last month, but the bank held off due to an outbreak of COVID-19. Outbreak. I mean, like three people in New Zealand got it.
What is New Zealand like population size? Like, I think all of those things are interconnected. Like,
let's look at it, because since we're doing numbers... We may as well pay some attention to these numbers. All right. New Zealand has 5.084 million people in 2020.
Sure.
So their population is increasing. It's not on the decrease, but it's only 5.084 million. Now, that's probably the population of most of Johannesburg.
You know, Johannesburg.
Maybe some of the outlying areas are left out, but that's not a lot of people. And it's definitely more space than Johannesburg.
yeah.
So they apparently have more than 700 small islands, apart from North and South Island as well. So I don't know. To me, you know, New Zealand, apparently if you break down the population, 70% of them are roughly white or European. The Maori is the largest minority at 16.5%. Asians make up 15.3%. And then non-Maori Pacific Island is at 9%. So that's roughly how you break it down, if you're looking at their population. Interesting stuff, right? It's almost the population of Cape Town, according to Omgopots. So that's not big.
Now all I want to know is, like, all of the land area. Now that we're in this rabbit hole.
All right.
The land area.
We've got 200
area of New Zealand.
268 thousand and 21 square kilometers.
Wow.
Okay, so it's substantial, and they've got lots and lots of open space. Lots of open space.
That's a lot of open space.
See, that might be attractive to some people. They might want to go to New Zealand just because it's got a small population. A lot of people don't want to be in a very heavily populated area. So that could be an attractive...
Is it true that there are more sheep than people in New Zealand?
That's what I heard.
I was actually about to ask, what about the animals?
So let's...
I've always heard that there are more sheep than people in New Zealand.
Well, maybe you're right. Let's try that one quickly while we're doing it. Okay, population growth. The short answer is yes, more sheep than humans. There are about 30 million sheep... 30 million sheep compared to 4.45 million people in New Zealand. So that's a lot.
Hilarious.
That's incredible. And that answer...
We did beat them at the rugby over the weekend.
Yes. That answer comes from exploratory.io. They say there are really more sheep than people in New Zealand.
They came in a bit sheepish on the weekend. Hey?
Yeah, correct. All right, so bringing it home, it is election month. I know that you're probably already sick of being campaigned to, but Musi Maimane has appointed two farmers, a diplomat, academics, and a former mayor as mayoral candidates for his party. They are going to be independent and in at least five municipalities in the country ahead of the local government elections on November the 1st. When candidates were announced in Midrand on Wednesday, there was a pastor, an academic, two farmers.
Is that the headline? Has appointed?
No, has announced.
It's his party.
He's announced, yeah.
Okay. Because he's not a party. He's a coalition of independents.
Correct,
it?
Yeah.
They're not like Action SA, all under one banner.
No, not as
they're
far as I know.
They're all just individual people who are... standing next to each other in that queue.
Correct. So, I mean, what do you make of this? What do you think of this? What do you think of Musi and his action? What are they called? His coalition. What do you think of it, Pumi? Do you think it has merit?
One movement.
You think it has merit? It sounds like a mixed bag of people.
I think as independents in the local election, they probably stand a good chance. It'll be hard, though. It'll be hard because we do also have proportional representation.
Right.
And that's kind of the lever that you have to pull. So even if you as an independent are able to bring in a lot of votes that will get you the seat,
yes,
you still have to work within, it's going to be a broad coalition, if anything, you know, because there's proportional representation. So all of the people that you're always going to have to convince to push through your policies or your ideas or your it's going to be an uphill battle always. But it's in local government, it's much easier than it will ever be in national government.
Yeah, and maybe, yeah, you know, even if he gets enough votes for some of these, each of these candidates gets enough votes, they can swing a couple of things in municipalities, they can swing a couple of things in the metros. Mm-hmm. Might be quite useful to see what happens here. Plus, I'm always in favor of independents because independents aren't professional politicians, usually. So back to his list of people he revealed. They were all at a function. It was attended by various organizations representing independent candidates who came from eight provinces in the country, except the Northern Cape. Bishop Vincent Jones of the New Horizon Movement in Imfuleni was the only mayoral candidate announced in Gauteng. He will contest the position in Emfuleni local municipality in Vereniging, which has been run into the ground. Apparently it's bad. Bad, bad, bad. So we'll see what happens. Ken Clark, he's the Twizzer producer, a former mayor of Knysna, a guy called Mark Willemser. There's a pastor, there's two farmers. So let's see what happens. It sounds interesting.
It'll be good. It'll be very fascinating to see what happens.
So can I throw this in quickly? This is a hilarious clip. It's probably about 2 minutes, but you'll be able to listen to it. It'll make as much sense as if you see it. About campaigning, and we're in campaign season at the moment, and I thought before the burning platform this morning, let's just find a reason to laugh. So here's a guy telling a story about campaigning. I think you're going to like this. Take a look.
A little story about a big man who died and went to the other side. On that day, God had decreed that whoever arrives must choose where to go. whether heaven or hell. So this man was excited. He demanded to visit hell first. And he got into something which looked like a lift, and he went down to hell. When the doors opened, things were glorious. The devil had no tail. The devil had no horns. He even met his friends. They were healthy, eating well, drinking well, making merry. Then it was time up, and he then demanded to be taken to heaven. In heaven, the picture was nice. Angels floating around, good music, the Lord Almighty presiding and reigning supreme. Finally, he was asked, what's your choice? Because you are not going to be judged. There's no judgment today. Judge for yourself. He thought, you know, these bishops have been telling lies and spoiling the name of the devil. The devil is a very fine man. He looks after his people. Now all these imams in the mosque making noise, saying Satan, Satan. This man is not bad at all. And in any case, heaven seems to be overrated. As a matter of fact, it's a bit boring. That was the debate in his head. So when the angel asked him to choose, he said, I have chosen that I'll go to hell, now that I've seen it with my own eyes. And the angel said, get into the lift. He got into the lift and he took him down. But when the doors opened, things had changed. The place looked like a desert. His friends were wearing dirty clothes. They were eating from the garbage pit. And the devil was now complete in his devilish regalia. The tail was out, the horns were out, and he was carrying a whip. So he tiptoed towards the devil and said, excuse me, sir, you remember me, don't you? I was here the other day. You surely remember me. And Lucifer said, go to hell, I don't remember you. What do you have to say anyway? He said, you know, the other day things were very nice here. Things have been changed for the worse today. What's happening? The devil said, I'm sorry, my friend. The day you came, we were campaigning. So, now, therefore, we need to tell our people to know that there's life after campaign. Okay. Thank you very much.
Isn't that cool? I just love that. The devil was campaigning.
There is life after campaigning.
I love that accent. That's
brilliant.
Awesome. All right. Brilliant. So there we go. We've got a great burning platform this morning. Let me just let you in on that. We've got Lito Ndoba, who, of course, we've spoken to. He's a lecturer at the Central University of Technology. He's a debater, a social political analyst, and we've had him on before, and people love having Lito on the show. And we got Big Daddy Liberty, Sihle Ngobese, who rejoins us. He's also taken a hiatus from the show for far too long. So we're going to have some really tough conversations after 7 o'clock. You're going to want to miss that. It's brought to you by Nando's, of course, on the Burning Platform. Coming a bit later today, too, we've got an interview with Derica Purnell, who wrote a book called Towards Abolition, which is about abolishing the police in America. And you're going to have to listen to this because Derica Purnell did not cover herself in glory during this interview. She actually quit the interview halfway through when it got a bit too heated for her. So I want you to listen to it. We've decided to play it out in its entirety. It's a bit of an embarrassment to her. And this is someone who has a law degree, a doctorate in law, from Harvard University, and she just had no facts at her fingertips. She's written a book on the stuff. It's her subject matter. She's written a doctorate on. It's stuff that she's researched, supposedly, but there was no depth or substance to her thesis, and it didn't take me long to find enough holes in it to make her just pretend that the interview was not worth doing anymore, or just lie and say her internet connection went down. We haven't heard from her since, but she opted out halfway through. So I'll explain it in the interview. You don't want to miss that. That's at 8 a.m. today. And if you feel like something controversial to start your Thursday morning, as if the Burning Platform isn't enough, this will definitely switch on all of those switches. Also, a brand new podcast series at 9 a.m. You may remember we spoke to the CEO of Cipla here on this show just a little while ago, and he mentioned their podcast series, which is called Health Matters. And starting today, you can hear some of their episodes right here on cliffcentral.com. The series is hosted by Ryan O'Connor, a well-known broadcast name in South Africa, aims to put experts from across the medical world right in your earbuds or your speakers. This week, you can hear a fascinating discussion about the COVID-19 vaccines with a guy called Dr. Jeremy Nell, who's the head of infectious diseases at Helen Joseph Hospital and Wits University. So make sure you don't miss that. That's all the stuff you have to put in your diary today. One last headline. There are a couple, but we'll just throw this one in here because it's something that's been going on. It's quite controversial. People are talking about it. The Phoenix election posters are a big discussion point at the moment. The DA has been in the firing line for its controversial election posters in Phoenix, north of Durban. The KZN chairperson, Dean McPherson, said only the ANC and the media had made the posters about race. The posters, which were placed on top of each other, read, "The ANC called you racists and the DA calls you heroes." And people are upset. Yeah. So there are a whole lot of people, even in the DA, who are saying, oh, I don't really agree with that, you know, because God forbid, like, the most dangerous thing in South Africa is that R word, racist. And some people still give it way more power than they should. So we'll see what happens there. But I thought I'd throw that story in, too. In case you were paying attention to news yesterday, you would have been privy to all of that on social media, too. All right. So many things to get to. We're going to campaign this month very hard. We're going to speak to as many of – we've tried to approach as many of the political parties as possible. And we've so far spoken to someone from Good. We've spoken to someone from the DA. We've spoken to Herman Mashaba. We've spoken to someone from Action SA who isn't Herman Mashaba. We spoke to an independent candidate who's running in Cape Town. Two of them, actually, who are very, very vociferous about what they're going to do in Cape Town. We've tried to get the EFF and the ANC on, and they're both kind of trying to shake us off, I think, because we're not making much progress. I wanted to get David Makura on because he's really got a campaign ahead of him. You know, he's got to fight hard for his place in the sun, whereas many of the other ANC candidates probably don't even have to try. They're going to get in anyway, and that's also why they don't need publicity and they don't want to come on the show as easily. But we are trying to get a broad representation of politicians on the show ahead of the elections, give them all a chance to plead their case, see what they've got. There are a couple of candidates we're at the moment talking to the ANC's preferred candidate for mayor of Durban. But until that person is confirmed in that role, you'd think by now they'd have sorted that out. We can't really speak to them as the mayoral candidate because they'll get into trouble with the ANC. So we're trying to get everybody.
We should speak to Musi's independents.
Sure, absolutely. Well, we'll try and get hold of as many of them now that they've been announced as possible, because I do think that there are lots of people who are interested in this stuff. But if you know anyone who you think we should speak to, whether it's even your local councillor, you know, I mean, they count in these elections. It's not just the famous names. It's not just the well-known people at the top of the party hierarchy and infrastructure. We want to speak to the people who are on the ground who have to deliver, because, frankly, local politics isn't and shouldn't be glamorous. It should be about delivery. That's all we care about. Mm-hmm. I don't care who's in charge of my ward as long as they deliver. That's how I feel. To me, the last thing I care about is politics or ideology.
Refuse removal.
Right.
Potholes.
Right. Yes.
Working traffic lights. Yes. Correct billing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the shit.
That's what we care about.
I don't care about your manifesto. Like, just collect my rubbish.
Mm-hmm.
The traffic lights must be working. No potholes on my road. Right? Bill me correctly.
I thought about you yesterday because I recorded an interview with somebody who I think you would probably be better to interview than I would in terms of asking the questions. So because you're a big fan of the State Capture Commission, right? So I had Angelo Agrizi for an hour.
Oi, oi.
Yeah, you have to hear this because I spoke to him for an hour and it's coming up next week. You make sure you listen to cliffcentral.com and you keep your diary around to make a note of when it's up, because you're going to love this. I mean, the guy just let the beans spill about Gavin Watson's death and what he thought really happened there. There's a lot to go on here. So I'd like to just throw forward to that as well while we're talking about stuff that's still coming up. And speaking of other things that are still coming up this morning, Life with Lebang, which is on today at 11 o'clock. What have you got planned for us?
Yeah, so I'm quite excited to speak today because I started a series of just basically pregnancy stories. I unpacked every single one of my pregnancy stories in every single episode, so I've reached the end. I've given birth to all my kids now. So today I'm unpacking how it's like being a stepmom and all of that jazz and figuring out how best to be a stepmom and how my stepkid deals with me and all of that stuff. So
yeah.
I'll be talking about that for like the first 30 minutes. And then for the last 30 minutes, I'll be doing This Is Us. And obviously what we do for This Is Us every Thursday from 11:30 till 12 is really bring on some good South Africans who are just going out of their way to, you know, just do some good without being told, without being forced, just out of the goodness of their hearts. So we'll be speaking today to another young lady who's just killing it, who's doing the most. So that's from 11 until 12 on Cliff Central.
Beautiful. That's today. Make sure you don't miss that. 11 o'clock today. You see, we're really churning out lots of good stuff for you this fine Thursday. But this thing about being a stepmom, and I don't want to preempt too much from your show, you can either be the wicked stepmother in the fairy tales, or you can be like that stepmom who kind of fills in for the real mom in people's lives, and sometimes even usurps her position as the primary caregiver, someone who's always there for love and support.
Usurps. What a word. Yeah. What a word.
No, but I don't mean it. I don't mean it in a negative way.
Are you surprised?
I don't mean it in a negative way. To me, like, there are a lot of stepmoms who have to step in because sometimes the mom is no longer in the picture. And she doesn't get involved, you know. And
so Gabriela Union, who I suppose possibly one of the world's most famous stepmothers, in her latest book talks about that role and obviously her own journey of becoming pregnant and then eventually having to use a surrogate. Hell of it. I mean, she's written the hell out of that book.
Didn't she also talk about how she was trying to have a baby and then he did have a baby with someone else while she was trying to have a baby?
No, so before she was trying to, when they were together in the early days, man, we want to hear this gossip.
You tell me, girl.
So they were together, Dwayne and her were together, and then went through a bit of a rough patch in the early days of their relationship, and then he got someone else pregnant in that time. And she's older than him, so she's got lots of those kinds of issues, right? She's got the older woman issues, and then she really, really had a really tough time keeping a pregnancy to term, taking a pregnancy to term, and lost countless babies, and eventually went with the surrogate.
Oh, wow.
And that's the story in her latest book. The book's called We're Gonna Need Something Stronger, because it's the second one. The first one was We Need More Wine. It's a hell of a story. It's a hell of a story. And just the experience of going through the emotions of, because for a lot of women, especially for her, I think there was quite a lot of emphasis put on the idea of being a mother and carrying the baby to be the mother and the bond that is formed by it. And the failure that she felt at not being able, at the what she terms as her womb betraying her.
Heavy stuff.
Intense. You need something strong for that one. Strong glass or something while you read through it. But it's very well written. She is very candid about a whole lot of her experiences about perimenopause and depression and about choosing a surrogate and the surrogate choosing you. Y'all didn't know that, right? You thought you chose the surrogates. They also, the surrogates also get to be like, am I going to carry this bitch's baby or what?
Like, that relationship sounds messy already.
And the shit has a pecking order. I don't know if you, there's a book, and subsequently to that, there's a mini series called Little Fires Everywhere, which is about surrogacy, which is about a woman that Kerry Washington is a surrogate, and she runs away with the baby. This is a real thing, apparently, in the surrogacy world. Has that
Wow. So, I've heard of like, you know, the surrogate moms or whatever changing their mind, or when a kid is given up for adoption and then the parent suddenly changes their mind and decides they don't want to give them up anymore, and the trauma that can lead to. Jesus.
And with the surrogate, it's quite intense, right? Because it's everything about that baby, the genetic makeup of that baby.
It's not her.
It's you. Yeah. You and your partner. All she is really is the vessel to carry.
Legit.
But there's so much stuff. Like, in America, you pay surrogates. So it's a transactional relationship as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the kind of stuff that goes into it. Like, people can go so far as to prescribe to the surrogate what they eat, how much they sleep, what they watch, read, and listen to. You can even prescribe the music that they decide, just like, yo.
I'm paying you. For 9 months, I own you.
Wow.
Like,
it does sound a bit like it's like maternity slavery. That's what that sounds like.
It does sound like that. Even when you listen, when you read her book about it, it absolutely sounds like that, because there's also kind of a pecking order of the kind of people that are the most desirable surrogates. And the most desirable surrogates tend to be, look, because of the cost of it, it's a lot of wealthy white people that can afford it.
Sure.
And so their pecking order is often the person that is least likely to run away with the baby. So they tend to go for Asian, or what they call in America, black and brown bodies.
So who are the people who are most likely to run away with the baby? Ian, while we're profiling people like this, who turns out to be the biggest baby snatchers and mind changers?
I never got there, but Gabriella eventually makes the decision to go with a white surrogate, because she's just like, with my black baby, if you're a white woman trying to run off with my black baby, you're going to stick up like a sore thumb.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't be unheard of that there are sometimes, you know, black women who will carry the white surrogate baby, or vice versa. That happens.
That is the most preferred.
Yeah.
Usually that, but also somebody who has a family of their own.
Can you imagine how that...
If you have your own children, because then you've got a proven track record that you can carry a pregnancy to term.
This is like where you...
If you have a husband, then you've got emotional support to go through the pregnancy, because pregnancy will take it through, you know, will take you through it.
But this is great. It's like choosing your investment company that's going to, you know, it's going to take your pension, for example. I mean, it's much more important than that, because you're actually making a person, but you have to look at their credentials. You have to check their track record.
Yeah.
I get it. I like that this is transactional. You don't need an emotional bond with this person. In fact, you probably don't want it. But what I love is, like, can you imagine how it screws with racist heads? If a black woman is carrying your surrogate baby, and you know.
I actually once got offered a bit of money to be a surrogate from like quite a well-known media personality. And I thought she was kidding. She wasn't joking. She was like, dude, please, you seem like you really have this unlocked. You're just popping babies out like this. And I was like, how much are we talking? And she really was like, I was curious at the time. Also, I wasn't working, so anything was, you know, I would take what I could get. And she was really offering some good money. Luckily, I said no. I just don't think I've got it in me to actually be able to do that. I would definitely take the baby. It is me. I'm the girl that would. I would. I'm way too connected to it, especially because I've done it so many times. Yeah. I know how intimate and sensitive that whole thing is. I can't just be like, poop, peace.
So Tracy says, I once photographed, and she's a photographer. We were talking to Tracy yesterday. I once photographed a twin surrogate. Natural birth. My word, it was beautiful.
Wow.
So much emotion and so many people in the delivery room. It was really very special.
That sounds amazing. So I imagine after that, now you must just go, I
walk.
So, and you do know that Gabriella Union's baby, her name is Kavya, is probably the world's most favorite meme.
Meme queen.
That baby has all sorts of expressions. She has an expression for everything. She is the world's favorite meme. She is used for all sorts of things. Like the shock, the sad, the happy. That baby is
that baby's
amazing.
Everywhere. Yeah.
Amazing. She is. I think we're all watching her grow through the memes.
Yeah. I was about to say that. We watched her, like, from birth become this meme queen till, like, her big age of 4 or 5, however old she is now. And it's so beautiful. She's like our child, all of us, as social media users.
Our
little meme girl.
She's a very cute child. She's beautiful. I'm just going to find a picture of her quickly and show everybody. I like that name Kavya as well. That's a beautiful name.
She also has a story about the name. She's always had. So she is one of those people that have always wanted to be a mom and has had. She says from when she was a teenager, she's had a list. Oh. Look at that child's face, right?
Oh, yeah. Look at
that's a cute
distrust.
Kid.
The distrust in
that
those eyes.
Yeah. No, she's
you
a very
you can already
child.
See that expression. She's already like, what am I doing here? Who are these people? Love it.
Well, there it is. There's Kavya Union.
Yeah.
Very cute.
Kavya James. Her second name is James.
Even better. I like James for a girl. Don't you like James for a girl? It's a cute name. Well, we've got the burning platform just around the corner, so we've got to get to that. And we will be back in just a moment. CliffCentral.com on a Thursday. CliffCentral.com.